to shattering this. We still have Glenn on the line, and we now have Scott joining us. This is our Sports and the News segment. I wanted to focus on NCAA. Yesterday in Dallas, the Big 12 commissioner, which, by the way, is kind of funny because there's 10 schools, I believe, that are part of the Big 12, Bob Bolsby, says that that cheating pays in the NCAA these days and doesn't foresee it getting any better in the future. During his annual State of the League address from Big 12 Media Days on Monday, Bolsby slammed the NCAA, notably the enforcement wing of college sports governing body. Quote, "Enforcement is broken," he said. "The infractions committee hasn't had a hearing in almost a year. And I think it's not an understatement to say that cheating pays. If you seek to conspire to bend the rules, you can do it successfully and probably not get caught on most occasions." What do you think? Is he right?
The cheating part, yeah. I think he's 100% right.
You know, it's stunning to me that over the past couple of years, you know, we've had Miami essentially exonerated, even though it is known for certain that Miami fans, Miami graduates, contributors to their athletic department, gave bucketfuls of money to Miami football players. And the only reason that they were not penalized by the NCAA is because the NCAA was corrupt in its own investigation.
And why was that? Who'd they have running the main investigation?
Emmert, who was previously the who is still paid millions of dollars a year to be head of the NCAA, and he was previously the athletic director for Miami.
Yeah, so he was the one doing this stuff. He knew what was going on.
Yes. Now, since USC was given essentially the death penalty by the NCAA for finding out in dealing with a someone down there in Florida who had nothing to do with them, wasn't even an agent, in business dealings with one of their players' fathers. And they were said that they had complete lack of organizational control, even though the NCAA acknowledged that USC's internal program for educating their coaches and their players on the NCAA rules and the do's and don'ts was as good as any they'd ever seen in college sports. Why would the NCAA be allowed to continue with its present leadership when it had to admit that it was so corrupt that it had lost complete institutional control in its investigation of the Miami football program? Why does one exist and the other was penalized? The other was not penalized.
Because the one would take for them to admit that they were wrong.
but they had to admit they were wrong. They pulled all investigations of Miami. They ended it because they admitted that they were engaged themselves in malfeasance, that they lost control of the investigation and did things that were illegal, criminal.
That was just the one guy, you know, paying back his school. I mean...
the whole thing is just such a farce. I mean, it's just a farce. Well, and over this period of time, how many stories have we heard of former football players from, particularly from SEC schools, saying that, oh, of course we were paid to play? I mean, and they all have their stories of how they would go to various boosters' houses, and the booster would just pull out the $100 bills and continue to say, tell me when it's enough.
Yeah, well, that's why I agree with the statement that he made, that the system is broken and that people are cheating, and it's worthwhile for the schools to allow the cheating to happen.
Yeah, beyond the fact that their whole mindset is a broken one. I mean the schools are going to make hundreds of millions of dollars off of football players and not pay them for their services.
Yeah, and CBS and all those places are going to make hundreds of millions more on the advertising they sell for the March Madness and things like that.
The NCAA makes almost all of its money on the men's basketball tournament.
Mm-hmm.
About 90% of its revenues come from the men's basketball tournament. And, of course, the schools make some 90%, 95% of their money from the football program.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, that's how they make a lot of money is going to be made on off of athletes of two sports, football and basketball.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm sure they're cheating and they're not just bad at math, because when I was in the Big Ten, it went to the enormous 11, and now it's the Big Ten is 12 and the Big 12 is 10. And so maybe they're just so bad at math that they're not really cheating.
Well, I think the Big Ten is like 15 now or 16, isn't it?
It's 14 now.
14, okay.
Yeah. I thought it was 12. Okay, yeah.
Maryland are now in the Big Ten. So.
Yes. Yeah.
Don't put them in conference names.
Yeah. You know, my view is that the whole system is so badly broken that there is no resolution for it. And that when you have really what I consider to be a grotesque immorality occurring at a university level, that this is actually a serious societal problem. And it's a serious societal problem for a number of reasons. One is, why are there the federal government has imposed an equal number of scholarships for men's and women's athletes, even though there are two men's programs that produce 100% of the revenue, and all of the other programs are net losses.
Except for a few places where, you know, a few sports can hold their own. Here in Minnesota, hockey okay. holds its own, but other than that, no other.
You know, there's a few schools where women's basketball is break even. There's a few schools where lacrosse is probably break even. And by break even, you know, it takes a lot of money to go and fly a lacrosse team throughout a conference now, where the conference footprints are thousands of miles across. So at best, that probably you could say break even amongst a half a dozen other programs at isolated places. But nationally, you know, the numbers are football from a university point of view is the cash cow. It not only pays for all other sports, it spends off millions of dollars for the universities.
Yeah, and as correct as Bowlesby was in that initial statement that he made about the enforcement,
yes,
he was so far off on the second part of his statement that I don't even know where to begin on it, because he was talking about how all these other sports are going to be eliminated, and that's just unfair. It's not because they put in as much work and do all this stuff.
Yeah, let me read his next statement, and we can comment on it. We are currently operating in a strange environment, and that we have lawsuits, he said. Plus, we have the, and he didn't say it, but we'll talk about it, the O'Bannon v. NCAA lawsuit. I think that all of that, in the end, will cause programs to be eliminated. I think you'll see men's Olympic sports go away as a result of the new funding challenges that are coming down the pipe. I think this may be tension among sports on campus and institutions that have different resources. It's really unknown what the outcomes will be. And what the O'Bannon case, let me just provide a little background here. You familiar with a fellow named Ed O'Bannon?
Yep, very much so.
Okay, basketball player in UCLA 1995 championship team.
Yep, one of my favorite college players of all time.
Okay, well, Ed O'Bannon is the poster child for a lawsuit being filed by former NCAA players who aren't pleased that even after they left college, when they should be paid for their likenesses to be used, that the universities are still receiving a premium in the NCAA from Electronic Arts for their sports games, where Ed O'Bannon and other images are being used without any reimbursement to the individuals, only to the colleges and to the universities. And so it's, and by the way, it's a lot more than Ed O'Bannon. It's also now Oscar Robinson has joined the suit, Bill Russell, who may be among the classiest and winningest athletes of all times, has joined the suit. And it's Electronic Arts being sued by and the college licensing company being sued by these players for taking advantage of them.
They were being sued. EA settled now. They're out of it. They settled for $40 million or something. I it's in the email.
Yeah,
they settled for $40 million. So.
Right. But
reminiscent of the old TV, television, and music industry residuals. Rip-offs.
Yeah.
You know, the musicians and TV stars had long been ripped off before this, and this is just setting the legal precedent for this format.
Yeah, but the NCAA has not yet settled. It's just Electronic Arts has settled. And so here, what the deal is here is that the U.S. courts are going to ultimately have to impose a verdict on behalf of the players, and they will, and it's coming down the pipe. The universities know it, and so what do you do? I mean, this has been the big challenge because of Title IX, and because of the NCAA rules apply to every sport as opposed to isolating the two sports that actually make money, basketball and football. If you isolated those two sports and you paid those athletes, and you had them be under an entirely different set of rules, then the rest of it wouldn't be that big a deal. But what the universities know is that there's no way they can pay the football players, say, $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month, and pay the women's broom hockey team $2,000 a month. I mean, that if they do that, what they're going to have to do is eliminate a bunch of sports. And then they also realize if you pay the football players and the basketball players, then the monies that those two sports spin off for the rest of the university, that money is no longer there to subsidize the rest of the sports. And then they recognize that since the money won't be there to subsidize the rest of the sports, and Title IX has required an equal number of women's scholarships, that all men's sports programs other than football and basketball will be gone. When we return to Shattering Myths, we'll talk about that. Find out how much of that is really true. Should we care? And is there a solution to the issue of Title IX? To having people perform a skill and not be compensated for it. Be back with Shattering Myths after a commercial break. Bullsby, however, scumbag that he is, came to the defense of the collegiate model, which has come under criticism. He argued against the unionization of college athletes, noting that, in his opinion, student athletes are not employees. Oh, therefore, you don't have to. No, even the fact that they are told when to show up to work and they are performing work, they're not employees. I guess they're slaves. He also said that it wouldn't be fair to pay football players, but not female student athletes. It's hard to justify paying student athletes in football and men's basketball and not recognizing the significant effort that swimmers and wrestlers and lacrosse players and track athletes all put in. The football and basketball players don't work any harder than anybody else. They just happen to have the blessing of an adoring public who is willing to pay for tickets and was willing to buy products on television because of the increased visibility. So I guess we're going to change the entire economic system of the world. Free enterprise, the hell with that. What we're gonna have now is we're gonna have effort monitors. And everybody's gonna have, somehow as part of their system, an effort monitor. And everybody's gonna be compensated based upon effort and not upon ability, not upon accomplishments. No, an effort monitor. How do you think that's gonna work out?
About as well as communism.
Well, it's not just effort, it's also also popularity. Now, like a philosophical purist might say, if you look at the history of collegiate sports,
mm-hmm.
since then, being a student is largely a sedentary, activity, originally collegiate sports were sponsored for, providing means of physical activity and camaraderie among the student
right.
body and
right.
for people to know each other. But then it gradually grew to develop all this diversification of all these different sports, colleges and universities becoming big business,
right.
and then all the added expenses of all the equipment, all the facilities, the gyms,
right.
arenas,
right.
And then the overhead of this. And then the question is, are sports, are collegiate sports too big to fail? Kind of like banks,
Yeah, right.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, do we have to subsidize them if they're too big to fail?
Yeah, this notion that that people should be paid based upon their effort, not upon their contribution, not upon their ability, not upon their achievements, just about their physical effort, is that Mosley, who made that statement, at the head of a collegiate organization, ought to have been fired. He ought to have been laughed out of town. Ought to have been, in a sane society, it would have been an absolute disgrace. I mean, that would mean, if we were to apply that to society, that the guy that physically picks up my trash, it happens to be a nice guy that comes and picks up my trash once a week, that he should make more money by picking up the trash, because it's more labor, than my son who designs jet engines. Now, mind you, that my son, who joins the internet, had 7 years of college to be in a position to design those jet engines. And but, all he really does is hit keys on his keyboard, goes to meetings, and has to contemplate the various ways to make jet engines more efficient and more reliable for the flying public and for their customers. But under this model, he does not work as hard as does the trash collector. So we should have the trash collector on the effort monitor be paid more.
Yeah, I know a couple of trash garbage men, and they make decent money.
Yeah, there's a lot, in fact, because the unionization. I was reading the other day that longshoremen, because it's the Teamsters Union, longshoremen and Port of Los Angeles make on average about $175,000 a year for operating anything in any of their equipment. Now, all they're doing is maneuvering levers on equipment, but they're making on average $175,000.
That's not a lot of effort. That money now goes to street performers.
It is so absurd. And the realization is that someone who is performing and has ability to perform a skill that is making money for another individual is an employee. I mean, you've really only got two statuses: employee or slave. With the slaves. Well, the slave owners had to provide them with a place to live. They had to provide them with some form of education so that they could understand the instructions they were being given and operate the equipment. And they were fed. I mean, what is the difference between slave and student athlete other than the instructions a little better, the food's probably better, and the housing's a little nicer? So what are you endorsing, Mr. Mosley? Want to go back to slavery? You like that a lot. I mean, you make a lot of money as a plantation owner. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to Shattering Us. We're talking about the broken nature of college athletics. And so, fellas, is Title IX appropriate? Where even though there is no woman that's ever been banned from playing on a college football team or the men's basketball team, that we decide that we need to have the same number of athletic scholarships for men and for women, even though there's not a single woman's sports that even breaks even on a national basis.
Again, the only one that I know of at the University of Minnesota is women's hockey, and that breaks even. So
Yeah, so on a national basis, there is no women's sport that breaks even.
Yeah,
probably basketball. Basketball comes close on a national basis. Women's basketball doesn't break even. It loses money on a national basis. So why? In fact, let me just go back one step further. Since the sports in college ought to be part of the educational process, I mean, I think that fraternities, sororities are part of the educational process. How do you get along with people? And I think sports are a wonderful way. I mean, I strongly encourage my children, and I played every sport imaginable, because sports is a great way to learn how to compete. Now, in sports, you learn to compete. It was all about your accomplishments, winning and losing. It wasn't about, you know, little Joey put in more effort than Johnny, but Johnny hit the home run.
Well,
but why should we even be offering scholarships for athletics when a university's purpose is to educate?
If you do it that route, there's no reason to. It should all be
get rid of it entirely, and to say, all right, if you want to play baseball at the university, since we don't make money on baseball, that's fine. Well, the university, because athletics is a good thing, will pay for the uniforms, we'll pay for the coaches, and we'll form conferences where you, like high school, you can ride the bus to the competition. And we'll pay for the buses. We'll pay for the baseballs and the baseball bats. And you can, if you enjoy playing baseball, by all means, we will facilitate you being able to play baseball, but no scholarships.
Well, they have intramural sports still,
right,
that people pay to play and things like that.
Yeah. And what about the establishment of endowments for given sports? You know, with those historically with vested interest in the sport played in college, you know, solicit alumni for endowment money for that sport.
So let the alumni endow baseballs and baseball bats, and they can create a stadium and a training facility for the kids to play. All marvelous. Sounds totally fair. You're encouraging the camaraderie, encouraging the work ethic. You're encouraging the team spirit, all the kinds of things that sports are good for, playing by the rules. And so encourage that, but don't have scholarships for it. And then you got the two monsters, basketball and football. Why not say on basketball and football, have the university, since they have all these facilities and there's such a thirst for basketball and football, why not just have basketball and football be apart from the NCAA, have the leagues managed by the professional sports franchises and associated with the universities? You could compensate the players for the best players that make the most money becomes an essentially a minor leagues for the NBA and a minor leagues for the NFL. And yet the schools still fill their stadiums and everybody gets to root because they're wearing the school colors. It's just that it's not, there's no pretense that they're students athletes.
Well, I think this division between amateur and the erosion of this distinction between the amateur and the professional is part of the problem, that all the fact that all the money has come into these monsters. They think about college as like a special time in someone's life when they're supposed to be upping their skills for the real world economy. But how many players, you know, go to school with or without scholarship, invest so much of their time in these sports, and major in origami and ikebana, and then when they get out of school and don't get drafted, manager training at a convenience store.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot more of them than there are the superstars.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about the idea that the only scholarships that would be offered by universities would be based upon academic achievement?
Right, because then they'd have to play for passion instead of the game has been moving.
Right, and so what's wrong with that?
It's what D3 is right now. You can't get a scholarship to a D3 school for athletics.
Right.
You have to. If you want to play athletics, you have to be, and you want a scholarship.
And do they have athletic programs?
They do. They have. Yeah.
Do the young men and women that play in those athletic programs have all of the drive to better themselves?
Yeah, and they,
do they learn about camaraderie, about achievement in a team, about winning and losing and playing by the rules?
Yeah, and I think that one of the big things to add to what you just said about sports is that it teaches you how to deal with adversity.
Yeah.
A lot of times you don't get the things that you think you should get in sports, and because you're there and you're putting in work, it shows you that working within a team, it does things for you. So,
right.
And winning, losing, I mean, it's adversity. And, yes. And yeah, they function completely because
wait. They don't have in sport. I mean, after you leave youth soccer, where they don't keep score, after you leave youth soccer, I mean, they don't have an effort monitor and give trophies out for the kid that worked the hardest as opposed to who won the game. I mean, I know you play in a semi-pro football league there in Minnesota. Do in your league, do you wear an effort monitor? And if you did the most push-ups that week, that your team wins the gold medal and the lollipop?
No, they don't. They shouldn't. But
they keep score.
We do keep score.
Oh
yeah.
My goodness.
They should outlaw the word playing the game. They should call it working the game. Working the game because it's now a word for which one must be compensated.
Oh my! Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
But yeah, I mean, well, keeping score, that's something that there are a group of people out there that do want to make it so you don't keep score and everybody wins and things like that. But that doesn't teach anybody anything.
Of course not. I mean, there's no challenge. There's no adversity. There's no sense of accomplishment. This idea that it's all part of political correctness, which is that we should just all get along. We should all be tolerant. We shouldn't fight one another. We ought not keep score. That's this blue sky view of the world that just does not exist. There is no purpose, really, of playing a sport if you do not play that sport to try to achieve something, which is to play by the rules to win the game. If that isn't your mindset, you ought not be doing it because you're wasting everyone's time. That's the purpose of the game. Now, you don't go and say, okay, so we won the game. Let's go and beat the other people up. Let's go and rub it in their noses. The whole purpose, you play chess to prevail over your opponent.
Well, it's the purpose you play any game. And most times after a game, you're not going over to the other people and telling them how great you are. Usually it's the scoreboard tells you everything you need to know, and you go over to them and you say, good game.
You sell for GCN. You sell advertising for GCN. Is it your job to be in a non-outcome-based environment where so long as you made a good pitch, that's really all that matters? It doesn't matter who the company chooses to advertise with, one of your competitors or someone else, that we should somehow change the world, that the outcome doesn't matter.
No.
The only thing that matters is if you tried.
It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it's all about results. And
so the farmer that plants his field that works really hard, but he somehow forgot to water his crop, that we should somehow pay the same amount as the guy that didn't work quite as hard, but he did manage to manage the process and actually grew a crop.
But yeah, somebody might feel bad if they don't get, you know, the good grade. Now, were your son's engine design courses all pass-fail? Because, like, you know,
none of them.
Engines were designed by people who were pass-fail courses. I don't think I'd fly.
No, of course not.
That's why excellence and differentiation is important.
Yeah, my son had to achieve in high school to get into a good engineering school for college because there are very few engineering schools that people qualify to go to the graduate schools. And, you know, I don't know if you ever watched The Big Bang Theory where, you know, the one kid only has a master's and they're poking fun at him because he's an engineer. In engineering, the most appropriate degree is a master's. And so he then got his master's. And the whole process was if you didn't achieve a certain grade point average, you couldn't go on. You couldn't even complete the program, and you had to go to a school that was high enough ranking that the company you wanted to work for would recruit from that school. And the whole thing is you have to achieve, and you have to achieve, and you're not just competing against others, you're competing against others that are really driven to be successful.
Well, it's the same as what football and basketball are right now in the NCAA. They're playing the basketball to make it to the pro level.
Most, and 95%
won't. 95%
won't,
but most of them play it because they want to make it to,
correct, to
a higher level. Correct. And most players that play, they can find, you know, jobs across, you know, overseas playing basketball and things like that. I mean, there's guys that I have a friend who's never played college basketball, but he plays overseas and he gets paid decent money doing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I've got no problem with somebody who is playing for a professional team getting paid. But there really is no difference between Ohio State football program and the Duke basketball program and a professional team, except the players aren't paid.
Which is why I agree with they're not officially paid. Again, like Bowlesby said, you can't tell me that they're not cheating because I think all these guys are getting money.
But if that is the way they're getting money, by breaking the rules and cheating, then what are we teaching them in the university setting?
Right. Well, and that's the whole societal thing with ethics, where we've shifted to the ends justify the means, the consequentialist ethic. Yeah.
Machiavelli is the new guiding light of politics worldwide.
And in terms of receipts, actually, I also wanted to add that's another story. Sports is a microcosm of what's going on in society. People don't go places. They watch TVs and go on computers. So, people aren't actually physically going out. We've got casinos failing in Atlantic City because people don't go out to the casinos. They gamble online or go locally.
Wow. Well, that's a whole other story. I mean, I think that we ought to be encouraging sports, but in a whole different light. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. One of the things we were talking about during the break was that there's a possibility there would be a much better way to even handle professional sports. You know, for example, I think it's a bad sign for society as a whole. I think it's inappropriate, for example, for a baseball player to make $30 million a year. I mean, there should be a reasonable a maximum amount that playing a game that you ought to be paid. And let's just say that we were to ratchet it all back and professional sports by 50%. And then you say, well, it'd be unfair for the owners to make more money. I would agree. So let's just say you take a sport like baseball, and you say, all right, we're going to reduce the players' part of the pie to 25% of the total. The owners get 25% of the total, but because the baseball is a regional game where the team, like the Los Angeles Dodgers, have value because they're the Los Angeles Dodgers. If you put the Dodgers out there in Palm Springs, they would have 1/100th of their value. And so they are the Los Angeles Dodgers. As the Barstow Dodgers, they're not worth much. But they're worth billions as the Los Angeles Dodgers. So limit the owners to 25% of the gross revenue. Take 50% of the gross revenue and invest it in sports facilities, particularly baseball, but sports facilities for non-professionals in the community. As Glenn said, get more people outside. Get more people engaged playing with games with their neighbors. Take 50% of the revenues and build sports facilities and places for young people and adults to engage with one another. Why not?
I'm promoting actually one such event right now. I'd like to plug for a minute. It's in trying to sell Ted Anderson and the management of GCN into an event wherein we rent the Staples Center for a mixed martial arts cage match between yourself and a host who's recently just returned to GCN after having been to Network 2 and Network 3 and Network 2 and now back to GCN. he's an atheist and very much empathetic to the Palestinian cause. So I think we just settle the whole thing with a mixed martial arts cage match between you and him. And then it would get a lot of attention, bring in a lot of money, and fund GCN for God knows how long.
you really... Yeah, I'm sure I'd be great in a mixed martial arts. Yeah, get the old guy out there. let him get pummeled. Yeah, that'll
resist. Once you get picked off, we'll start it off with some verbal debate about the topics, and then get the
okay. So then I get enraged, and then that shot of adrenaline will cause the old guy to be
lock it in there, and then start asking some questions, and boom.
Just keep your left up, Craig.
Just keep your left up. Oh, thanks. If you're going to be in my corner, you're going to
sure,
throw a water
why not?
On me when I... Well.
You can do it,
amazing.
Rock.
By the way, it's truly amazing that somebody can be an advocate for a cause for people that don't exist. You have to, when you have to start with a lie, Palestinian, when you have to start with a lie, you know, your cause can't be very darn good. You know, if truth won't work for you, and your premise has to be based on a lie, chances are you're not going to make a very effective sparring partner.
That's the spirit. Now we're ready. Say, hey, look, I've got him on the other line. I'm going to conference him in from Oahu, and here we go.
Okay.
Just do the advertisement for the cage match.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Yeah, well, it'd be a thrill to get Ted Anderson, who owns GCN, to actually support the program. So if you can pull it off just for giggles, we'd go along.
Yeah. I mean, you get AJ in to influence him, and then we'll see if we can get through.
Ring announcer.
And supplements and stuff.
Yeah.
And we're good.
Well, okay. Well, I think one of the other things you can do just for promotion. Do you ever listen to the show that follows mine on Channel 2, Bill Deagle, who's the Nutra Medical Hour? Yeah, he announced yesterday that he had a meeting with Jesus, and that of course regularly he has meetings with Plendor, who is the Lizard King. Sometimes Plendor, though, masquerades as Prince Charles in some of their meetings. I think we really ought to have promote a wrestling match between the imaginary Jesus and the imaginary Plendor, with Bill Deagle being the referee. That would also be good for GCN.
I've never heard the Plendor thing. Wow.
Can we have it at Palestine Stadium?
There you go. Yeah, we'll have it in the middle of the Palestinians, the wrestling match between Jesus and Plendor, officiated by Bill Deagle. We'll be back after the commercial and the news. Thank you, fellas.